don't be reading comments about some guy that's never seen you play, but he's seen a 15-second clip of you on Twitter. You know, that's the thing that kind of I think goalkeepers nowadays have to be really careful of. And social media is brilliant, and I use it in some aspects, but in some respects as well, it can be quite difficult, and it'd be quite a difficult place to be at times.
Hello Keepers, and welcome back to a new episode of the Club Zone Podcast. We're your host Marcus Sundin, and alongside me is Alexander Brams, as always. Today we're joined by a new guest, Tony Cate. Welcome to the podcast.
How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Just a short introduction of you. You are, from your LinkedIn profile, you are goalkeeping coach, tutor and scout at the Scottish Football Association, while being head coach at Selts Pro Training, and also head consultant at the Goalkeeping Consultants. That was a broad description of you, but can you take us through a little bit what you do on a daily basis within goalkeeping?
Okay, well, recently I've just left Livingston FC in the Scottish Premier League. I finished at the end of this current season. That's just a couple of weeks ago. I was there for 3.5 years, so I was working with the goalkeepers on a daily basis at Livingston. But the opportunity to get more involved with the Scottish Football Association has came up, and it's something that I wanted to pursue. So that role is going to be along coaching, so involved with some of the squads, the looking around the 17s and the 19s, and also coach education, which I've been involved with now for a few years, so helping tutor on the UEFA goalkeeping licenses, and then also scouting. So the scouting part of it is what interests me, and that's starting to come together now with the looking at the English-based goalkeepers that are eligible for Scotland through the different age ranges. So there's quite a few goalkeepers playing at English academies straight through to the first team. So it's just me to keep an eye on them via whether that's via on coaching to scouting platforms like Y Scout, but also trying to get to see them play live as well to build up a profile and reports and feed that back into the head of goalkeeping, Fraser Stewart, and also to the relevant head coaches of the age groups, the age group teams. So that'll be kind of my network work. The Selts Pro Training is obviously Selts is a well-known goalkeeping brand. They put together a structure to have coaches work for their brand in having their own coaching venue. So that's for youth goalkeepers, grassroots. I oversee three venues in the area of Northern England where I live. My son actually coaches on that full time, and I have some part time coaches as well. So I kind of oversee those venues while these guys are doing the coaching on the ground. And the consultancy part is something that came up during lockdown at the beginning. Me and a couple of good friends of mine, Ben Benson, who's the goalkeeping coach at Blackburn Rovers, and Dave Timmins, who's currently assistant manager at Ayr United in the Scottish team, but he's primarily a goalkeeping coach. We were talking about a way of having an online platform that could potentially help individuals, grassroots clubs, even professional players, whatever, somebody that they could come to. So in terms of it could be mentoring, it could be developing their programs within their clubs, anything to do with goalkeeping, but all on a private and confidential basis. So that's kind of a service we've offered. So we've kind of dabbled at that without going into too deeply because we've all got other things going on, but that's something there in the background that we have done we've done some online things as well, workshops, and delivered those, which we've quite enjoyed doing. So broad spectrum, but it's quite a varied work, which I enjoy.
Interesting. So correct me if I'm wrong, you leaving Livingston and going to these new venues, you went from obviously being on the pitch on a daily basis to now being a little bit more away from the training pitch and the coaching side. I know you have obviously the consultant where you coach as well, but how was the transition going from being on the pitch and coach on a daily basis to now be a little bit more away from the actual coaching?
Yeah, when I stopped playing, I was quite fortunate. I made the transition in my early 30s as a player to a player coach, and then towards my mid late 30s, it was as a full time goalkeeping coach. And it was the kind of natural transition for a former player. And it was the actual coaching that I really enjoyed, and I do enjoy coaching still. But what I've found is in the last 3.5 years at Livingston, I initially went in on a part-time basis when we were in the Scottish Championship. And my first season there, we got promotion. So we went into the Scottish Premiership, and the club wanted me to be full-time at that point. And what I had started to put these other things in place, and I was a bit reluctant to... I've got so far down the route with putting these in place to then step back from them and leave them again. So I spoke to the club, and they were good about it. And I said, look, could we possibly have an agreement where I still coach part-time, which allows me to do these other things with the SFA and myself's pro training? And they were absolutely fine about it. So for 3.5 years, I've actually just been on the pitch 2 days a week and match days. So I haven't actually been doing all the coaching Monday to Friday, like 4 or 5 days a week. And we structured the week in a way where, so say, for example, we had a Saturday to Saturday game. On a Monday, the goalkeepers were joining with the players, and they were joining in possession practices and be a part of the session. So that would become their day of dealing with the pass back, linking play, getting comfortable in possession. So that would become that day. Then I would be in on the Tuesday. Then they would probably have a rest day on the Wednesday. I would be in on the Thursday. So obviously linking that now to the game on the Thursday and what the opposition might bring. And then Fridays was so very little in terms of training anyway. It was mostly a bit of walkthrough of shape and set players. The goalkeepers would maybe, if I was actually in, I'll probably have got 15 or 20 minutes with the goalkeepers in isolation, just some handling. So the goalkeepers would go and do that themselves on a Friday. Then obviously I'm there on the game day. On Saturday. So in effect, they're only really missing a Monday. But that Monday is completely geared around them joining in and playing at the back of the practice and being a goalkeeper in terms of pass backs and dealing with the ball, the feet. And the Tuesday, Thursdays and the days I was in, I would have the goalkeepers for a bulk of the session. So possibly 2/3 of the session. So they would get enough goalkeeping work in terms of the technical and tactical with me, and then they would go with the teams and the players and do whatever the manager wanted to do next. But so the transition's been fine. I think now, only time will tell how I see it going forward. I still want to try and coach. I still want to coach once or twice a week if I can, just to keep my hand in, keep my eye in of what I'm seeing. Whether that allows me to go into a club, I'll see. I mean, I may well have the opportunity to go in and do some part-time work with another club in Scotland at some point, but we'll see over the next few couple of months and see how my role develops with the SFA. So I'm okay with it, and I actually quite enjoy the kind of diversity of everything that I'm doing and the different things that I'm doing. So it's not something I need. I always thought I would, but the last 3.5 years has taught me I don't really need to be on the pitch every day, so to speak. Yeah,
and it goes hand in hand with the evolution of goalkeeping. The goalkeeping is developing, and is developing in a fast pace at the moment. And that goes over to our main topic today, where we're going to talk about a little bit about how goalkeeping is affected by media and social media, how we can sometimes overanalyze on the different platforms. And to be honest, nowadays, being a goalkeeper is very tough, because every single action we do within the game, within practice, you can analyze it on video afterwards. So from your perspective as a goalkeeper coach, how do you see media, and more specifically social media, with all the content out there, stuff like that, affecting the goalkeeping position overall?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really use a lot of social media until I started with the Cells pro training venue. So and my social media accounts are really just to give out information as far as venues, training, what we offer, a little bit of advertising, but not to get involved in terms of making comments or discussion on areas of goalkeeping or what somebody's done or should have done, things like this. So, but what it did really make me aware of was when I was on social media, I obviously look and scroll through and see what's going on in the world, and I follow different things. And everybody seems to have an opinion on different subjects, and in terms of goalkeeping specifically. And that may well also be from people that aren't what I would consider to have the background or be goalkeeping almost qualified to make those decisions, because they, or those opinions, because they don't really see it for what it really is. It's just a knee-jerk reaction, and they almost follow one person's comment. So there's a narrative on a goalkeeper, and I notice it a lot with the goalkeepers in the Premiership in England, is that, you know, Jordan Pickford, there's been a narrative. If he's made a mistake, there's a narrative that goes on for weeks beyond that. So you're not actually looking at how Jordan's playing. You're actually just looking at the one moment, and then that clouds everyone's judgment for the next few weeks, because people comment on that and reinforce that and anchor that thought in to people's minds. So they're not actually really looking at Jordan and how he plays. So linking back how I would scout a goalkeeper, for example, I would look at a goalkeeper. I'll look at his actions there and then. So I will scout those actions. What he did in the previous game doesn't really have any bearing on that. That will build a bigger picture because we watch him over a number of games. But looking at him in that game, I will scout what I see in that game. So I can't then talk about a mistake he made a month ago, because how relevant is that to this game? It's not relevant. And I think that's where social media plays a huge part. And the goalkeepers that are playing nowadays compared to my playing days, they're under so much scrutiny and so much pressure, because they can show every single goal from 15 different camera angles, and they'll show it over and over and over again. So that one kind of misjudgment or that one perceived mistake is shown so often, it feels like he's made 50 of those mistakes. And in people's minds, it keeps reinforcing that he's made, but they don't think it's only one mistake. And that happened a month ago, but all of a sudden people say, oh, he's not very good, he shouldn't be in the England squad. It's kind of comments like that. And I'm like, no, we need to look at it, the bigger picture, and think about what's really gone on and what's really happened. And I think it's just really tough. And talking to the goalkeepers I've worked with in the last 3 years, I've always spoke to them and said, look, you've got to limit your time on social media. Why would you go on there and read things about yourself? You know how you're training. You know how you're playing. The only times you need to look at your actions from the games is when I go through them with you, and we'll discuss it properly. And we can come to a professional between ourselves opinion on what's happened in the game. And if something needs to be worked on, then we'll get together and we'll put a plan together and we'll work on it. But don't be reading comments about some guy that's never seen you play, but he's seen a 15-second clip of you on Twitter. You know, that's the thing that kind of, I think goalkeepers nowadays have to be really careful of. And social media is brilliant, and I use it in some aspects, but in some respects as well, it can be quite difficult, and it'd be quite a difficult place to be at times. You know, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same. As the listeners know, me and Marcus are goalkeepers and content creators, and we post a lot on social media, and we get a lot of good comments, but also we get some comments that we don't appreciate, where they probably could have commented this with some constructive criticism, like, we think that you should have done this, or don't do such a big arm swing whenever you're about to dive, or whatever. And then we say, instead they say, never do this, or you're a bad keeper, or you should have caught that, and things like that. So yeah, especially on social media, there is a lot, and it's easy to point out, and it's easy to hide behind the screen and say whatever you want. So yeah, definitely social media is a big impact, and we see it on everyone's, on all the big keepers social media pages, where people comment, both good and bad things. And I hope that they just ignore it, because that's what I've learned. I've learned just to ignore the haters, if you can say that.
Yes, I think it's the best way. I think from yourself, and you know, yourselves who were playing at the moment, and I played in a different time, so it was, social media was starting to come in towards the back end of my career, but it wasn't as prevalent and in your face as it is now. And the goalkeepers now, it's so difficult. But what I would say is, and the advice I give is, don't look at what they've written, look at who's writing it. That's the most important part. Look at who's writing you. So it's like any advice you're given as a player or a goalkeeper. So if I was coaching goalkeepers, and I would hope that they would listen to me, because I'm basing what I'm talking about, what I'm seeing and my experiences. So that's how I come up with what I think. So then we can move forward with that, and they can disagree with me, and that's fine. And then we can talk about this. But when people are just flippantly throwing out comments on social media about how you've played or something you've done, I think you've really got to look at who's writing that. And that would be my advice. But it's difficult, because no matter who you are, it still hurts a little bit when you see it. So why look at it? That would be my thought. Why even look at it? Because how relevant is it to you personally? It's not really, is it, to be honest? No.
Well, that's very true. And that is also something that we've talked with some sports psychologists on, is that you might have 200 comments saying amazing save, but then there's one. Mm. And it's the one that you remember, that you notice, because it's kind of negative and the mind thinks automatically about the negative things. But that's something we have to cut out and ignore. And as you say, why look at it at all? Just ignore it. Like, it won't hurt you. It'll just hurt him if you don't get an answer, honestly.
Exactly. It's only words. And I think yourself, as you get more experienced as a player, as a goalkeeper, you actually, I mean, I found it myself, even from what coaches or managers would say to me, through my 20s, everything had a kind of major effect. And then when I got to my late 20s, early 30s, and you start becoming kind of comfortable in your own skin, and you know what you are as a goalkeeper, you kind of know what your strengths are, what you can and can't do. And so that what anyone else then says from that point on doesn't really affect you, because you know what you are. If someone, I expect this, and I want you to do this, and I want you to do that, you can actually say, well, I don't think I'm capable of doing that, but I can definitely do that for you. Now, that's you get, because at the moment, I think everybody wants every goalkeeper to play the same. So everybody expects everyone to have the levels of, say, Alisson or Ederson or Ter Stegen or Courtois, whoever, the top four or five goalkeepers in the world. Everybody expects everybody else to be like that. But if you look through the whole of time of goalkeeping throughout the last 50, 60 years, there's always been three or four at the top in every generation. So not everyone can be at the top, but everyone can try to get there and be close to that. I think also as well, punditry doesn't help as well on TV at times with the actual comments that are made, because they're coming from they're experienced football people who are former professionals, but in all honesty, don't really have any real idea of what it feels like to be in goal. They know what a goalkeeper looks like, a good goalkeeper looks like, and they'll have played with top keepers, but they don't really know what the intricacies and the little movements that they have to make and what they have to do to be a top goalkeeper. And it's like anything. I can watch another sportsman or a sports person, a sportswoman, be in the top of their game. And I can think I know what that kind of looks like and what it will be, but I don't really know. I can't really pass comment because I don't really know. If I watch a top golfer, I kind of get it, but I don't really. So it's not for me to then pass comment on that, because I can't tell Phil Mickelson how to hit a golf shot when he's just won the PGA this week. And so it's the education side that I think that needs to be a little bit better from the pundits as well, because they add fuel to the fire, I think, as well, you know, because they judge, all their comments are coming from a place of the goalkeepers they played with. And the chances are the goalkeepers they played with were probably in the best four or five goalkeepers in the world at that point in time. So that makes the judgment calls a little bit unreasonable for me. I don't know how you feel about that. Yeah, I
definitely agree, because mainly in Denmark, the pundits, the commentators, they are former outfield players who were part of the 1992 Euro Cup winners. So it's been a few years since they've played. And also when they played with keepers, it was completely different. And often, no, every weekend, there is a pundit making a weird comment. And for outfield players, fans watching, they just think, oh yeah, all right, he's right. He's a pundit. He's a commentator. He knows what's right. And you sit here as a goalkeeper, and I often text with other goalkeeper friends being like, why is he saying that? Why For example, I actually had a little Twitter debate with Per Frimann about whenever Gladbach played against Real Madrid, Jan Sommer, he played so good. And the pundit was like, yeah, he's not a top-class goalkeeper. He doesn't go in the box and punches the ball the way it goes for catching. And he said that it wasn't a good game. And then I was like, how can you say it wasn't a good game? He was flying, saving so much, being so fast on the line, doing all this job. He meant so much for his team. There's a reason why he's captain, because he is a leader. He plays a lot with his feet, his communication skills, and then his unbelievable shot-stopping abilities. And he was like, yeah, if you looked at the weekend, he made a mistake. And I'm like, how can you compare this game to... Yeah, so there's definitely often very...
I think it also, when we see all these so-called experts being outfield players, they don't really come with constructive criticism, because they always just say, yeah, you should have saved that. Instead of us as goalkeepers, we know maybe what he should have done differently to save it. But the comment within games, after the games, is always just, yeah, that was bad goalkeeping, he should have saved that. Instead of, if we have a actual goalkeeper, former goalkeeper, looking at it, he would probably have said something that we could use and analyze and then actually become better listening to it, instead of just listening to all these so-called experts saying, yeah, bad goalkeeping, he should have saved that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, sometimes I think the TV networks, they obviously get on these guys, the former players, the well-known, the drawing people, the drawing ratings, because they used to play for big clubs. And I understand all that, and that's fine. And that's what they need to do. So in some respects, the comments that they give or the remarks they make regarding certain playing a game about goalkeepers, can we really expect them to come out with anything different than what they actually do say? Because they don't, in all honesty, have the knowledge, and they don't have that understanding of the position to actually give a comment that is relative to what they've just seen. Where if you put a goalkeeper or a former goalkeeper or even a current goalkeeper on that panel or sat in that studio, their perspective and what they say will be totally different to them. So it takes the pressure away from the outfield pundits. It puts it onto the goalkeeper or the goalkeeping coach or whoever it is to give their thoughts. But we know it will be coming from a place of experience and knowledge. So the comment will be relative and understandable, and it'll be broken down in a way where people understand it. You know, I say watch the Premier League in England, and it'll just be, I think he should save that. There's always this one, it's in the middle of the goal, he should save that. And I it kind of baffles me, because what they don't see is, they just see what they always look at is, they look at the end result and they want the narrative, the story, to fit the outcome. So they just say the ball's gone in the net, he should save that. But they haven't looked at, did it go through someone's legs? Did it take a slight deflection? And because they've never been a goalkeeper, they don't know what it's like to be unsighted. They don't know what it's like when the ball goes through someone's legs, and it takes away that third or half of a second reaction time that actually makes it impossible for you to save it, even though it is quite close to you in the goal. But by the time you react, it's past you. So they don't look at these things. So it's because they don't understand it. So in some respects, I can have my issues with it, but really, do we expect anything different from the comments they make? We can't. So it's a subject that is rumbling on all the time. And I know in England they're starting now to have goalkeeping coaches or former players on the panels, and it adds a different dimension to it, but it just seems to be now and again. So there's always a contentious goalkeeping topic or issue, probably every other game, how they perceive it, because goals are scored. So now that with the over analysis of goals and all the camera angles, then there is always going to be opinion that divides. So why not always have a goalkeeper or goalkeeping coach or a specialist on there? So then when something does come up, they can just pass it straight to them and diffuse it. Or maybe it's a ploy in terms of the TV companies, because they know when an outfield pundit makes a comment, it's going to create debate. It's going to create this, oof, why has he said that? He doesn't know what he means. And then before you know it, it's on social media. It's being talked about on Sky Sports News. It's on different outlets. So it creates this, you know, but again, it doesn't help the goalkeepers. We come back to it. You know, we come back to it and it's always, look, a mistake happened. And then it's shown so often and talked about so often and discussed so much. You'd think he'd made that mistake five games running. By the time you've stopped talking about it, and by the time you stop talking about it, that you're only probably another four or five games away from a goal going in where someone's questioning that same goalkeeper. So the narrative builds and the pressure builds, and that people start thinking that goalkeeper isn't capable of doing the job, when in reality, they've made one mistake in the last 15 games, you know, and it's like, come on, you know. Goalkeepers used to make mistakes years and years ago. It's just it wasn't shown on TV. But the talk about these goalkeepers being unbelievably consistent and never making a mistake. They did make mistakes. It was just not shown. And nobody saw it because it wasn't on TV. That's, you know, the goalkeepers have always made mistakes, you know. And I just think that we need to just kind of relax a little bit. But again, going back to who's talking about it, who's saying, who's giving the advice, who's giving the comments. Not what the comments are is the really important part for me. Yeah.
Yeah. But if we then look at the more positive side of how social media affects goalkeeping, I believe myself that social media play a big part of how the evolution of goalkeeping is getting more appealing for young players to decide to become a goalkeeper themselves, because I know that years back, not a lot of players was just like, oh yes, I want to become a goalkeeper. Everyone wanted to become the game winner and become a striker and score in every single game. And all players really cared about when we were younger was scoring the game winner, right? But I think now that when we see Ederson making the perfect distribution side volley, it's so satisfying to watch. And I know from being a Danish myself, looking at Kasper Schmeichel and just looking at his distribution is so satisfying to watch that I just want to go out on the field and kick balls around myself. And also distribution has become so much more important than it was years back within goalkeeping. So again, from a personal perspective, I believe that social media, all this content, it makes goalkeeping more appealing for the younger players to decide that they want to become a goalkeeper themselves.
No, I agree. I think, like I said earlier, I mean, I use it primarily for information or promoting certain things that services we offer. So it's definitely a big help to me. And I agree with you. Social media used in the right way has such a positive impact to a number of people, and especially to young goalkeepers who get, you know, access to seeing footage or seeing real positive clips. You're talking there about Kasper Schmeichel, you talk there about an Ederson or an Alisson, the top goalkeepers that can get almost instant access to clips, to the saves they make, the decisions they make, and these things can only help these goalkeepers because they go out there and try and emulate like you say you do. I mean, I you know, the Cels Pro training venues we have, you know, the goalkeepers all turn up in numerous different club kits, you know, Man City, Man United, Everton, everybody, you know, and they've all got the goalkeepers' names on the back. And it's becoming a more glamorous position to play. It's becoming a position that players actually choose to go into, rather than many, many years ago, it was kind of the player that was, you know, the last player got put in goal. And I want to play in goal. It's becoming a choice. So you're tending to find that the goalkeepers now that are coming through, they're seeing these goalkeepers that are playing now, and I say the younger goalkeepers, that the actual techniques and the skills they've picked up already at a young age is quite unbelievable, really, compared to when I was a young goalkeeper coming through, because you didn't see anything. You'll see saves or you saw some highlights now and again. But Now it's everywhere, so the goalkeepers can go and try things. And I see them do it in our sessions. And it's developed onto the point where, especially with the distribution element of goalkeeping, you know, being the first point of attack and starting the play now, and especially with the centre backs being able to come and drop into the 18 yard box, and you're now playing a short pass to receive it back to switch the play. Your passing and receiving skills are under so much scrutiny as well. So these are things that we as coaches have to evolve, and we have to make sure that we're working on these and putting these into practice. And I think the goalkeepers actually embrace it now. I mean, I was actually playing, I just broke into first team football when the pass back rule was introduced. So as you can imagine, that first season or two, it was the amount of goals conceded, because nobody was quite sure what to do with it. The managers didn't really know how to work on it. They didn't know what to do with it. It was basically a ball came back to you. It was just like just get rid of it. Just kick it. So the amount of times managers would say to me, just kick it out of play. If you're in any doubt, just kick it out of play. And we'll defend a throw-in. Now imagine doing that in the modern game. Imagine what the fans would be like. Could you imagine what managers would be like if you're just kicking the ball out of play? That, you know, it just wouldn't happen. So, but it helps now. The pitches are better. The surfaces are better, so the conditions are better, but there's also structure and it's being worked on. So I think people talk about, oh yeah, now and again they give goals away, which does happen from it, but managers have got to work that out for themselves, you know, the risk and the reward factor of trying to play out from the back and the distribution elements. So it's such an important part of the game now, when you're actually looking at the goalkeepers, when you're scouting them now, and, you know, looking now even with the national teams in Scotland, I have to look at how the teams play, you know, the younger age groups, and see the goalkeepers that could be eligible or potential call-ups to the squads. And you need to see, will they fit into the style of play? And will they be able to add something to that? Is that something that sort of, but if we did call them up and he had to play, if he can't quite do that yet, because I think there's always a yet with it that can work on it. Things people are quick to judge that a goalkeeper can't play a certain way. You have to look at the team they're playing. They might not play that way. So they haven't been tasked with it, they haven't been challenged with it, and we don't know till they are. So you need to see them and work with them and find out for yourself, because there's always that about Nick Pope with Burnley, you know, and Gareth Southgate, and can he play out from the back? But, you know, I think Nick Pope would be fine with it with England. Of course he would. But Burnley don't play that way. So we can't judge him on Burnley's style of play. We've got to look at Nick Pope on what he can actually do. So if he's with England and he can play out from the back, but again, I think the narrative comes, the story is, look, he can't play out from the back. He can't play. Why? How do we know that? We don't really know, to be honest, because we've not seen enough of him to know that. Because Burnley don't do that way. They go quite direct, which is really effective for them and how they play. So I think we have to be very careful on how we judge the goalkeepers as well. But the distribution elements is, you know, you guys will see that for yourselves now and how that keeps moving. It seems to move on season to season now. There seems to be something new each year coming in. Me as a coach, I have to embrace that and take that on and use it and try and evolve with it myself.
Yeah, that's very true and really interesting talking about all this. And it's also really interesting how the position has evolved. During many years, I remember myself watching YouTube videos when I was young, and now the amount of content there is out there, like the insights we get from England whenever, every time they're training, we get a video with Pickers, Pope, so on, all of the lads in there, and it's really interesting and getting all these insights. That's also something that is making the goalkeeper position more appealing, seeing that how they train, how cool it is to make that save, and how you have to hold the ball and so on. So it's really good. But carrying on, we have a usual question here in our podcast, and that is, since we are called Gloves On Podcast, what are your favorite gloves and why?
Well,
I think you might be biased a bit.
Well, I suppose what I will say is now we're definitely obviously Cells, because I'm involved with Cells. So that's something, but Cells have always been a top brand glove, and you know, each year they seem to bring out, you know, a new innovation and a new way of designing and developing gloves. So I mean, they are a top glove. I mean, throughout my playing career, I was with various different brands at different times. I had about 8-9 years with Umbro at the end of my career. So the last part of my career I was with Umbro. and they had an SX glove, which was brilliant. But I always remember, go back to, I wore Sondico gloves because they're one of the only brands around when I was really young, first as a professional. But when Earlsport brought out the roll finger glove, I was with Earlsport. I'd signed an endorsement deal with them for a couple of seasons, and they brought out this roll finger, which, because every glove was a flat palm. Every glove up to that point was a flat palm glove. Then they brought the roll out, and Tim Flowers was the goalkeeper for Blackburn in England, and he helped design this roll finger, and he was one of my favourite goalkeepers at the time. So I was wearing the Earlsport roll finger. So that's one of my favourite gloves ever when that first came out, because it was a new invention. You know, there was how no one had ever thought about putting latex all the way around the finger until the 90s. I don't know how it took that long. You know, why didn't you know? And his thoughts were, look, the more latex that's touching the ball at most times, the more chance you have of catching the ball, which kind of makes sense. So it was the Earlsport roll finger in the 90s. But yeah, I mean, it's different gloves now. I mean, the brands and so much available, but yeah, I'd have to go for my all-time favorite would be that glove. Yeah.
Gotcha. And as we see, goalkeeping is developing, so is goalkeeper gloves. It makes sense. But Tony, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today and sharing your knowledge.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. All the best.
You to you as well. And to the listeners out there, if you could please leave a review, we would highly appreciate it so we can improve our podcast. And also remember to check out Alexander's page, Danish Goalkeeping, myself, Goalkeeper Dane, and also give a follow to the Clubzone podcast. Talk to you soon.